This is Anglia Examinations, England. Listening Examination. Level 2. Paper DD Proficiency 116. Instructions. Listen to the recording and answer the questions. You will hear each part of the recording twice. There will be a pause before each part so you can read the questions. There will be other pauses to let you think about your answers. When you hear the tone, you should write your answers on the question paper. Write clearly in the spaces provided. You must ask any questions now, as you cannot speak during the test. Listen to the first part of the test. Section L1. You will hear a guide speaking to visitors the night before they go on a walking tour of Norwich. For questions 1 to 5, listen to the recording and tick the correct box. For questions 6 to 10, fill in the missing information.
Hello everybody. I'm Lauren, and I will be one of your guides tomorrow. Our first stop will be Norwich Cathedral, where we can explore 1,000 years of history. Founded in 1096, it's the most complete Norman cathedral in England. It has survived war, plague, and fire, and dominates the Norwich skyline, thanks mainly to the high quality of stone and flint used in its construction. The walls surrounding Norwich fared less well. They were constructed about 200 years later, badly damaged in the 16th century, and finally ordered for demolition in 1871. On leaving the cathedral, we'll move on to the Cathedral Close, with its picturesque buildings. It's often used as a location for period dramas. You may have seen The Market Girl that was shot here. It's ironic, really, as no markets have ever been permitted in the Close. In fact, any money-making activity is banned, so musicians and performers gather around the town square. Next stop, the majestic 12th century castle. It currently serves as a museum and gallery, but until the 18th century, prisoners were kept on the ground floor here. As it was originally a royal palace, the accommodation available on the upper floors was considered far too luxurious. I also recommend the Forum, a state-of-the-art public space, one of the many millennium projects in the country, built to commemorate the year 2000. It was built on the site of Norwich Library, which burnt down in 1994, and it has been voted the best library in the country. For shopaholics, the new shopping mall has a great mix of boutiques and department stores selling an eclectic range of goods. Be warned, though, as they're quite pricey. If it's decent food you're after, resist the food outlets of the Mall and head for Stock Street, as that's where you'll find some of the best restaurants that Norwich has to offer. We'll set off on our tour at 10:30 sharp, and it'll last about 2 hours. We'll assemble outside the hotel entrance, and then split into three groups to make it easier for you to hear what's being said. Unless you come wearing waterproof clothing, I suggest you bring an umbrella, as the forecast isn't too promising. Oh, and a word of advice. There are morning services in the cathedral, so please be especially quiet when we're there, so as not to disturb the worshippers. If anyone would like a plan of the city, I'll be happy to give you one in a moment. And if you're interested in reading about it in more depth, there's an illustrated guide on sale at the reception desk, costing £6.80. See you in the morning then. Don't be late.
Now listen to the first part of the test again.
Hello, everybody. I'm Lauren, and I will be one of your guides tomorrow. Our first stop will be Norwich Cathedral, where we can explore 1,000 years of history. Founded in 1096, it's the most complete Norman cathedral in England. It has survived war, plague, and fire, and dominates the Norwich skyline, thanks mainly to the high quality of stone and flint used in its construction. The walls surrounding Norwich fared less well. They were constructed about 200 years later, badly damaged in the 16th century, and finally ordered for demolition in 1871. On leaving the cathedral, we'll move on to the Cathedral Close, with its picturesque buildings. It's often used as a location for period dramas. You may have seen The Market Girl that was shot here. It's ironic, really, as no markets have ever been permitted in the Close. In fact, any money-making activity is banned, so musicians and performers gather around the town square. Next stop, the majestic 12th century castle. It currently serves as a museum and gallery, but until the 18th century, prisoners were kept on the ground floor here. As it was originally a royal palace, the accommodation available on the upper floors was considered far too luxurious. I also recommend the Forum, a state-of-the-art public space, one of the many millennium projects in the country, built to commemorate the year 2000. It was built on the site of Norwich Library, which burnt down in 1994, and it has been voted the best library in the country. For shopaholics, the new shopping mall has a great mix of boutiques and department stores selling an eclectic range of goods. Be warned, though, as they're quite pricey. If it's decent food you're after, resist the food outlets of the Mall and head for Stock Street, as that's where you'll find some of the best restaurants that Norwich has to offer. We'll set off on our tour at 10:30 sharp, and it'll last about 2 hours. We'll assemble outside the hotel entrance and then split into three groups to make it easier for you to hear what's being said. Unless you come wearing waterproof clothing, I suggest you bring an umbrella, as the forecast isn't too promising. Oh, and a word of advice. There are morning services in the cathedral, so please be especially quiet when we're there, so as not to disturb the worshippers. If anyone would like a plan of the city, I'll be happy to give you one in a moment. And if you're interested in reading about it in more depth, there's an illustrated guide on sale at the reception desk, costing £6.80. See you in the morning then. Don't be late.
Now listen to the second part of the test. Section L2. You are going to hear 5 speakers talking about their school days. For questions 1 to 10, choose the correct answer, A, B or C. Speaker 1.
What I find odd about people is the way their school days have such an influence on the rest of their lives. My two close friends and I had really diverse educations. One went to private school, one to the local state, and one was home educated. Sarah moans that because of her expensive education, everyone thinks she's a snob. And Angela goes on about chances she never had because her family was poor. Mine were poor too, and they didn't think much of the local state, so they just did it themselves, from the living room. It was okay. I had a great social life, and I didn't have the stress of having to compete with my peers, although I still can't do maths. Basically, because no one in my family could. I only did 5 subjects, the ones they preferred. That was a downside, I guess.
Speaker 2. I quite enjoyed school, although I wouldn't admit it then, and I struggled with chemistry. I wasn't the worst in the class, but not far off. Funnily enough, that was the lesson I looked forward to most. I'd put that down to the teaching. I sailed through history and maths and was top of the class. I used to do extra maths for fun at home, but those teachers were quite dull, so I just sat and did what I was told. I didn't misbehave much, either at home or school. I do remember one occasion. We'd had a school trip the previous day and everyone was fed up with being cooped up in school. So we started a food fight and flicked peas around the dining room. I was the one who got caught and got sent to see Mr. Thomas. Speaker 3.
I haven't got very good memories of my school days. My main problem was that I was quite a large teenager. I know that's hard to believe now, but I remember I used to eat everyone's school dinners because everybody else hated them. I got picked on quite a lot, and that was probably the worst thing, marginally worse than all the homework in Year 6, which is saying something. I remember some of my so-called friends filling my bed with cake crumbs at the hotel we stayed at on the French trip. I've never had any desire to return to Paris since. No, for me, the 12 weeks a year I didn't go there were definitely the highlight.
Speaker 4.
My primary school was idyllic. As soon as the bell rang, we'd race down the cliff path and search in the rock pools. Our family nearly moved to the city, and I probably would have had a better education there. I even had the option of going to a rural boarding school. But in the end, we all stayed put, and I went to the local secondary. That was fine as it turned out, and I have lots of happy memories. None of them quite beat winning the 1500 metres on sports day when I was 15. Although that only just beat going out with Jennifer Wingate, the prettiest girl in Year 10, my first love. My parents, of course, were happiest when I got good grades in my final exams. I still have that gold medal hanging up, though.
Speaker 5.
I have mixed memories of school. I was bright in primary, so they put me up a year, and that meant all my secondary classmates were older than me. That wasn't an issue because I was better than my peers at most subjects, especially physics, chemistry, and biology. That didn't mean I didn't worry about other schoolwork, though, and when my class teacher made me form representative, I found the pressure too much, and I had to give it up. Later on, they made me head girl, and the head boy and I had to sit on the stage in morning assembly. It was excruciating. I just hate people looking at me. It haunts my dreams even now. At least I didn't faint on stage like he did, and everyone laughed, even the teachers. I think that was just cruel.
Now listen to the second part of the test again. Speaker 1.
What I find odd about people is the way their school days have such an influence on the rest of their lives. My two close friends and I had really diverse educations. One went to private school, one to the local state, and one was home educated. Sarah moans that because of her expensive education, everyone thinks she's a snob. And Angela goes on about chances she never had because her family was poor. Mine were poor too, and they didn't think much of the local state, so they just did it themselves, from the living room. It was okay. I had a great social life, and I didn't have the stress of having to compete with my peers, although I still can't do maths. Basically, because no one in my family could. I only did 5 subjects, the ones they preferred. That was a downside, I guess.
Speaker 2. I quite enjoyed school, although I wouldn't admit it then, and I struggled with chemistry. I wasn't the worst in the class, but not far off. Funnily enough, that was the lesson I looked forward to most. I'd put that down to the teaching. I sailed through history and maths and was top of the class. I used to do extra maths for fun at home, but those teachers were quite dull, so I just sat and did what I was told. I didn't misbehave much, either at home or school. I do remember one occasion. We'd had a school trip the previous day, and everyone was fed up with being cooped up in school. So we started a food fight and flicked peas around the dining room. I was the one who got caught and got sent to see Mr. Thomas. Speaker 3.
I haven't got very good memories of my school days. My main problem was that I was quite a large teenager. I know that's hard to believe now, but I remember I used to eat everyone's school dinners because everybody else hated them. I got picked on quite a lot, and that was probably the worst thing, marginally worse than all the homework in Year 6, which is saying something. I remember some of my so-called friends filling my bed with cake crumbs at the hotel we stayed at on the French trip. I've never had any desire to return to Paris since. No, for me, the 12 weeks a year I didn't go there were definitely the highlight.
Speaker 4.
My primary school was idyllic. As soon as the bell rang, we'd race down the cliff path and search in the rock pools. Our family nearly moved to the city, and I probably would have had a better education there. I even had the option of going to a rural boarding school. But in the end, we all stayed put, and I went to the local secondary. That was fine, as it turned out, and I have lots of happy memories. None of them quite beat winning the 1500 metres on sports day when I was 15. Although that only just beat going out with Jennifer Wingate, the prettiest girl in year 10, my first love. My parents, of course, were happiest when I got good grades in my final exams. I still have that gold medal hanging up, though.
Speaker 5.
I have mixed memories of school. I was bright in primary, so they put me up a year, and that meant all my secondary classmates were older than me. That wasn't an issue because I was better than my peers at most subjects, especially physics, chemistry, and biology. That didn't mean I didn't worry about other schoolwork, though. And when my class teacher made me form representative, I found the pressure too much, and I had to give it up. Later on, they made me head girl, and the head boy and I had to sit on the stage in morning assembly. It was excruciating. I just hate people looking at me. It haunts my dreams even now. At least I didn't faint on stage like he did, and everyone laughed, even the teachers. I think that was just cruel.
Now listen to the third part of the test. Section L3. You are going to listen to part of an interview with charity fundraiser Kimberly Akers. Answer all the questions below by marking the correct box with a tick.
Kimberly, can you tell us a bit about what you do?
Well, I basically create new fundraising initiatives, budget, liaise with companies, approve social media activity for our charities, and go out to support the grassroots workers in making new contacts. I have a designated office space at home and one at our head office, neither of which I have used in the past fortnight. I'm certainly not desk-bound.
So what is an average day like for you?
What's average? One day I'm meeting with a managing director, pitching ideas for thousands of pounds of sponsorship. Then I'm attending a cycling event, meeting participants, and posing to have my photo taken to promote the charity. Then there's the crisis management. What to do when a celebrity speaker cancels 2 days before an event, or the special T-shirts that can't be manufactured in time.
How did you first get into charity work?
I worked for a financial company after university and spent a belated gap year in Australia. That gave me the perspective to realise that making a profit for investors I'd never met wasn't what I wanted to do. I looked at the great but varied society around me and decided I wanted to give rather than take. A friend back in London had started working in the non-profit sector, and it dawned on me that working for a charity was actually a career option.
What skills do you need to be a successful fundraiser?
You need to have solid business sense and creative flair. Interpersonal skills are more important than qualifications, but there are roles for all kinds, whether you're physically able or not, old or young, gregarious or shy. But the one thing that you must have is the ability to work together as part of a team to achieve a goal. That's not optional. You know, we're all working for the same cause here.
How has fundraising changed since you started out?
Well, it's increasingly done online, which is what people want these days. But it also creates a distance between charity and giver, which I think's a shame. There's also been a rise in the number of charities out there. You must have noticed that. And you'd probably think this means there's more competition for people's money. But you know, together with more charities, there seem to be more people prepared to give. So things haven't changed much overall.
Now listen to the third part of the test again.
Kimberly, can you tell us a bit about what you do?
Well, I basically create new fundraising initiatives, budget, liaise with companies, approve social media activity for our charities, and go out to support the grassroots workers in making new contacts. I have a designated office space at home and one at our head office, neither of which I have used in the past fortnight. I'm certainly not desk-bound.
So what is an average day like for you?
What's average? One day I'm meeting with a managing director, pitching ideas for thousands of pounds of sponsorship. Then I'm attending a cycling event, meeting participants, and posing to have my photo taken to promote the charity. Then there's the crisis management. What to do when a celebrity speaker cancels 2 days before an event, or the special T-shirts that can't be manufactured in time.
How did you first get into charity work?
I worked for a financial company after university and spent a belated gap year in Australia. That gave me the perspective to realise that making a profit for investors I'd never met wasn't what I wanted to do. I looked at the great but varied society around me and decided I wanted to give rather than take. A friend back in London had started working in the non-profit sector, and it dawned on me that working for a charity was actually a career option.
What skills do you need to be a successful fundraiser?
You need to have solid business sense and creative flair. Interpersonal skills are more important than qualifications, but there are roles for all kinds, whether you're physically able or not, old or young, gregarious or shy. But the one thing that you must have is the ability to work together as part of a team to achieve a goal. That's not optional. You know, we're all working for the same cause here.
How has fundraising changed since you started out?
Well, it's increasingly done online, which is what people want these days. But it also creates a distance between charity and giver, which I think's a shame. There's also been a rise in the number of charities out there. You must have noticed that. And you'd probably think this means there's more competition for people's money. But you know, together with more charities, there seem to be more people prepared to give. So things haven't changed much overall.
That is the end of the listening test. You will now have 3 minutes to check your answers. Your listening paper will then be collected.